Hello, dear friends. This is Tomo Jakobsen, and you're listening to Postscriptum, my segment under Uncovering the Sinews podcast. Today, we're gonna listen to Sylvie Courvoisier, forgive my French pronunciation, a conversation with her about her humble beginnings. Because this is something that always fascinates me. How on earth does it happen that people start playing music? You know, it's like when you think about it, it's in a way it's ridiculous. You just hit piano keys with your fingers for hours every day your whole life. How does that make any sense? And yet people do that and transform our lives. So this is a conversation with Sylvie about how she started, where her whole career sprung from. Sylvie, if you don't know, is a world-renowned Swiss pianist based in New York, like for decades now. She was in Copenhagen during Freedom Music Festival Volume 3 in 2017, the festival I organized. So she played a concert, and on top of that, we also had a private conversation, which parts of you will listen to now. I could not resist, but also includes a few pieces from her live performance, which was astounding and pristine. So there will be a few pieces before and in between and after her voice. So without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, and all the rest of you, please welcome in your hearts Sylvie Courvoisier, her piano and her human voice.
Thank you. father, my father is a Dixieland, a jazz, swing jazz pianist.
Right.
And he had a day job, he was a travel agent. And every night when he came back from work, he was practicing his piano and playing. So when I was, my bedroom was next door to the piano, so. And he always play every night.
Yeah.
And I know exactly what he was playing. He was playing some monk tunes. You know, like, he's not a trained musician, so he always do mistakes, and I love his mistakes. I say, okay, he's going to do this scale, and he's going to stop here. And I say, oh, that's great. and he has a particular way of playing, because he's self-taught, and he loves music. His love, I mean, he's the most happy when he plays the piano. So in my head, I was always saying, wow, music can make someone so happy.
What about your mom then?
My mom, she sings in a choir.
Okay.
But she has pretty bad taste in music. She always gave me the score of Richard Lederman, and I don't know if you know that. It's the worst music. But when I was a kid, I was thinking, oh yeah, that's... So it's between Richard Lederman of my mom, and my dad loved Monk, and for him that was the super avant-garde stuff. And the traditional, you know, swing, stride on the left hand, and so boogie-boogie. We were playing a tons of boogie-boogie with him.
So he was like gigging in town, and...
He's doing weddings to me, yeah. Every weekend he was doing weddings and brunch, Sunday brunch. And he has two bands. One band is called the Aftershave Band, and the other band is called the Swinging Jokers.
Beautiful.
And they're happy guys, I can tell you that much.
So...
And they have an outfit, they have like pink shirt with stripes.
And everybody's the same, of course.
Everybody's the same.
Nice, nice. So it was him who started teaching you piano, or?
I mean, he never wanted to teach me. For him, piano is a game. You don't practice. You have pleasure and you play like you play cards. And everybody in my family, we love games. We didn't have a TV, so every night we were playing either cards or either piano. Stefan, one of my boys, would play a little bit trumpet. And we were always singing songs in the evening, you know, when my father... Everybody in the family liked to sing, so we were even inventing songs and trying to find harmonies on the piano and laughing a lot. And my grand aunt, she loved to invent words on the song. So we had this whole thing. So it was really like, but not trained. It was really like it's really like a game.
And it sounds like, you know, like how the education for a free improviser should look like.
But the problem, like, when I told them I want to become a musician, I was 8 years old, and I said I want to become a pianist and a conductor, and they say that's not a job.
Oh yeah.
That's not a, you know, music is pleasure, but you don't make money with that.
Yeah.
So this is, that's not, no, it's not possible. You cannot do that. And they close the piano and they put a key on the piano because they were afraid I was going to practice and do too much piano. This is, you're not going to become a professional. And when I was 18 and I began the conservatory, and I told them I'm going to enter the professional conservatory so I could have a job. They say, no, I was really good at mathematics. They say, you should go to university and study mathematics. And I say, no, I want to do that. They say, okay, the door is here, and you will see what the real life is.
Really?
And you come back home, and after you go back to the concert, to the university.
Yeah. Wow.
So it was pretty strict for that. Yeah, music is a game, and it's fun, but it's not something you do professionally, for my parents.
So you didn't have like musicians in the family that would.
My grandfather was a musician, but he died.
But your father too. I mean,
yeah,
like
but amateur.
Earning, yeah, but he was.
Yeah,
still
but
earning
he was.
Money,
it,
right?
It's earning money like, you know, $200 on weekend. He said you cannot make a living with it. You cannot raise a family and you know, have a career with it. He just said it's good for to have fun. But he was a travel agent. and make money too. And my mom was a waitress. That's real jobs.
So what was it like? Can you tell what it was that pushed you into it? Like,
I think just a play. I love playing. I always, and still now, I still love to play.
Yeah, but it seems like so did they, you know, like, because you say that they treated it as a...
Yeah, they love play. They love music too, but for them, you know, there is, in life there is fun, and after there is work. And even if my dad kind of liked his work, but he never, they were just worried. I think it's more old-fashioned school, and they didn't imagine that someone can make a living with just playing music.
So you were self-taught until you went to the conservatory?
No. I took some class. I asked my parents, I want to take some lessons, and so they put me at a social music school in Lausanne. It's like a little conservatory, and after I took some lessons with my father's teacher. His name was Gérard Lecôte, and he was a really interesting guy. He's a musicologue, and he knows a lot about art, and you know, he teaches sociology also at university, so he's really a brilliant guy, and he knows a lot about jazz and harmony, so I learned with him some harmony and jazz, and I had some classical lessons.
But did you know what you want to play early on, or like, was it that you wanted to play jazz? Or?
When I was 10 or 9, I was playing boogie-boogie and stuff like that, like my dad, I mean.
Right.
And I was learning that with Gerard, with my father's teacher, and with my dad, too. I was always improvising with him. And
that's cool.
That's cool, yeah.
But the conservatory then, that was...
Later.
Yeah.
Much later. Right. It's when I wanted to become serious, and my parents were really freaking out.
But that was like a classical music,
yes,
right?
Yes, that's a classical. In Lausanne,
because at that time, there wasn't.
There was only one jazz school in Bern. So already I was hesitating to, because you have to do an exam to enter. So I had two choices, either to prepare for the classical exams or for the jazz exams. And the Bern school was really oriented bebop. And I didn't really want to play bebop. And I told myself I really want to master the instrument. And I thought, okay, I should do a classical school. So I took private lessons to prepare myself to enter the professional school. And I did that when I was 18. And when I finished my gymnasium, we call that a bachelor. And I took some private lessons with Jacques Demierre at this time. For improvisation. I don't know if you know Jacques Demierre, it's a pianist from Geneva. I think he's a great pianist, a great improviser. And he's do also sound poetry, and it really opened my mind. So that's good. And I was doing to see I had my Russian teacher pop off at the conservatory. It was really Rachmaninoff, Chopin, boom, boom, boom. And I had Jacques Demierre, who was really this guy where we're just playing one note and doing... We had a band called TST, kind of rock avant-garde. And I always did both. I did also Siena Jazz. Have you been to Siena Jazz?
No, I haven't. I've heard about it, yeah.
I did that from when I was 16 and 17 during the summer. I used to spend 1 month there. And it's all... at the time, there was only Italian guys teaching... And we were about 200 students. And for 1 month, so there was like, you know, theory and workshops. And so I did that for two. I mean, it's not so much, but I mean.
How did it feel to, like, separate these two things? You know, because on one hand, there is this very strict piano...
Pop-off teaching.
But you know, especially since you are coming from the place that is.
I was not telling my teacher, because he was really mad whenever I was doing some other things, and So I was trying not to tell him that I was going. I said, oh, I'm going to Italy for holidays. I didn't tell him I'm going to.
Mm-hmm.
And then that was before Popov, even Siena Jazz.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so, sorry, and so that was, what, like 5 years? Of?
Yeah, 18 till 20s. I didn't even finish.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
you dropped out?
Huh?
You dropped out?
I did. You have to write a memory, and I failed on my memory. I had to rewrite it, and I never wrote it.
You mean like the final
like
essay?
Like a essay, a dissertation.
Yeah,
I hated school, but I like the theory. I like the, you know, contrapoint, contrapoint and harmony, and I love to sing in the choir. I love. We had conduction also. I like that too. Some classes were really bad, but some were okay.
And so...
The contrapoint was really good. We had really...
Yeah.
We were like, you know, learning how to write fugues, and I really like that.
And also how to write,
yeah.
Right? Yeah. Yeah, and so and when did the composition start then?
Like, I never studied composition,
no.
Never. But I always wrote my own songs.
Mm.
Even when I barely knew how to write a note when I was 10, I mean... I asked my teacher, how do you write the notes? And, you know, my piano teacher at the time. And he showed me, and I was writing my little song on a book. And
mm-hmm.
I always liked it. And I was always also listening to radio and trying to copy what I heard on the radio.
Yeah.
But it was always a game, like playing cards or playing chess or... No. And Stefan, my young, I have two brothers, and Stefan is the younger of the two. He was playing trumpet. So, and I used to like to go to his class with him.
Mm.
Because I could see how the I really liked music. I always liked it.
So you jammed together also, I guess, yeah, a lot?
No, you didn't. I think I was better than him at music. That's the only thing I was better than him, so he didn't like it. He stopped. He quit after like 1 year, I think.
Right.
He was really mad at me.
So that was. So you're done with the conservatory. Like when is it?
93, I guess.
93. So then there is. Because what was the scene really like in Switzerland?
There were some jazz guys.
Oh.
Yeah, I did also a jazz school in the evening in Montreux.
Mm-hmm.
And I did a certificate. There was no professional school. And my teacher was Thierry Lang. He was really like a... He's really influenced by Bill Evans, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I was doing, you know, this kind of voicing thing and tuba, you know, like... That was really this... And I like it. At the time, I was liking anything. Just sure, I wanted to learn anything. I just love music. I was going to concert all the time. I remember I went to see. I went to Willisau. I took the train by myself. I was 16, and I saw Jerry Allen, and it changed my whole vision of the piano. I mean, because you know. And I heard her, she died like two months ago, and I heard her with Charlie Hayden and Paul Motion.
Wow.
And I was at the sound check because I knew someone who was working there, and she said, yeah, you can come in at the sound check. So I saw everything from the sound check. And,
yeah, I never caught, like, I was always had a very warm thing for Charlie Hayden, but I never caught him live. Like, I actually, when I went to New York, I did, like, especially flew to LA to meet with him, but he was falling sick, like,
okay.
With polio again. And, you know, like, when I arrived, like, he died soon after, actually.
Okay.
So what were, because you moved to New York in 98, right?
98, yeah.
Yeah. Tell me about that, like how did that happen?
You know, I had my own bands. Right, as soon as I finished conservatory, I had a quintetto with two guys from Siena, students, you know, young kids like me. I was writing the songs, and I did my first album with them. And so that was my quintetto. And after, so as soon as I finished conservatory, I didn't really want to play classical music. I didn't really want to teach. I just wanted to be with my quintetto and write music and practice with them. So that's what I tried to do. And I had my apartment because like almost nothing. So I didn't need so much money. So, and so what we were doing, we were touring with a van, and we were like five people in the band, and we were going to Belgium to play a gig in front of five people, but we did it, you know, like a lot. So that was my band, and I had a trio also at the time with kind of a rock drummer and electric bass. Anyway, it was not really good, but...
But that was all like jazz-based still.
It's all jazz-based, and I was writing all the music.
Mm.
A little bit kind of monkish, influenced by Misha Mengelberg, always kind of this comedy thing. I love all the Dutch thing. And so I almost moved to Holland and to Amsterdam because I love Amsterdam. And I was playing with some Dutch guys. And after in 95, I met Mark Feldman because there was a Baden-Baden jazz meeting and the director of the jazz meeting, Akim, he died now, but... He invited 12 musicians from all over the world. And I was one of these musicians. I don't even know how I ended up. Because I was playing with Michel Godard, with his quartet. So Michel was a little bit famous at the time. And I was a new face, you know, like I was 25. And so I was the only girl. And not Linda Sharrock. We were two girls, Linda Sharrock and I, at this meeting. And Mark Feldman, and there was... Wolfgang Puschnick at the time was married to Linda Sharrock. I just saw him in Saalfelden. Do you know Wolfgang Puschnick? And who else? I can't remember. Jim Black was there.
Yeah.
Vincent Courtois. He's a great cellist from Paris. And yeah, Mark Feldman. On tuba there was Marcus Royas. I forget who was. And I did 2 years at Baden-Baden jazz meeting. And 1 year, Mark Feldman was there. And we become friends. We didn't date it at the time. We just become friends and we began to play together. And...
But he lived in New York.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
He's in New York or no?
He was living in New York at the time, yeah. Mm-hmm. He moved to New York when he was 30 years old. So that's why. And after we begin to play together, and he was, every time he come to Europe, he was hanging with me. And in 96, I went there for like 2 weeks just to go there. And yeah, and I was playing with Thomas Chapin. You know Thomas Chapin?
Yeah,
he died in 95 from leukemia. Because I was playing with some Dutch guys, and Thomas and I, we were both the guests in this band with Tony Overwater, and I forget the other guy's name. Anyway, so Thomas told me, so you should come, if you come to New York, I'll organize some gigs for us. So I play at the Knitting Factory in the little room downstairs. And yeah, it was in 96, I think, the first time. And he died just after that.
So you moved?
So I was there, I play a few gigs there. And with Mark, we become more and more friends. And in 97, I did a big project in Switzerland, and I invited Mark, and there was Michel Godard, all my friends from Switzerland, and was the musician I was playing with. And after, yeah, he asked me to go out with him and to move to New York, and I said, let me think about it. And I said, okay, I'll try for 1 month. And here I'm, 20 years later, I'm still there. I mean, 19 years later, yeah. I didn't expect that at all because I was not really, I was not attracted to live in a big town.
Mm.
It was never my dream to. I'm happy I moved there. I was already 27 or 28, so I wasn't like a kid. I already did my stuff in Europe. I had already a lot of bands, and so I had already a little taste. And when I went back, when I went to New York, I had a few little gigs, but almost nothing. And I practice a lot. So I really begin to practice late, you know, like the whole day, because Mark was always on tour. I didn't have to pay a rent because he was paying the rent. And I had a small upright piano, and I didn't know nobody in New York. So I was practicing the whole day and going to gigs at night.
Hmm.
That was really what I did for like speaking when I moved to New York.
We'll be right back.
hear Marta Gerich or Gideon Kremer, don't you have the feeling they improvise?
Yeah, totally.
They improvise.
Yeah.
It's the same.
Yeah.
It's exactly the same. It's music.
So for you, like playing other people's music, or
I should learn the music so well, so I feel it's my own music. Like Marta Gerich always says, Prokofiev loves me, you know, with her accent.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote for me. She's loaded, probably, but because she learned this music so much, it become hers.
Mm-hmm.
And I know this feeling. When I learn something so well, I have the feeling I wrote it. Yeah. And now even sometimes, it's what I was playing with Kenny, and you know, I wrote all music. Kenny's my jazz trio with Kenny Wallason and Drew Grass. And I wrote this complicated music or with Odwin. And Kenny said, you should learn it by heart. Because one night, you know, I'm really blind, I don't see well. So one night I couldn't see, it was dark, and I made mistakes. And I said, I should memorize everything. Like, I memorize a lot of other music. Why do I not memorize my own music? So now I'm in the process of memorizing all my trio music, because it's ridiculous that I need a score for my own music.
Mm.
You should be able to play all music, memorizing and playing in different tonality, because it's good for your brain to transpose and to, but not you know, two bars, one of your own music, and you transpose, you understand, ah, yeah, how did I do that? Why did I write this chord? Because sometimes you write and you don't really understand what, for me, it's only after I analyze, I say, oh, wow, that's a...
So how... But how...
So I have a lot of work to do. Still.
So, but then... The process of composition and process of improvisation, like how these two... Is it still the same for you?
Nah, when I write, it's... I use mathematics, I use some... You know, some stuff, some pivot, I have some method, because if I just use my ears, I will. I think I go further writing, because I can do, you know, theory or, you know, retrograde, pivot, or, you know, this kind of stuff, and I write it down, and after I look what it sounds good, and after, oh yeah, that doesn't sound, and I change some notes and.
You set yourself strict rules?
No, not really. I begin, I have one idea, and after I'm stuck, so I do a retrograde. Usually I have a few ideas, I go very fast, and after I try to fill up the holes.
Mm.
So often I have an idea, yeah, I should begin like that, I should finish like that, and I know, okay, and here, yeah.
Mm.
And after I say, okay, maybe I do a little retrograde here, okay, here this, like, okay, I notice a lot of force, so okay, if I go ahead, that half step, or three, you know. Or have a rhythmical idea and I want to use that.
But that sounds kind of similar to improvising.
Yeah, but except you go much slower.
Yeah.
And you can much more be much more complex. Because when you improvise, I mean, I can retrograde 5 notes, but I cannot retrograde 24 notes and do a diminution of the tempo or adding a dotted hand. I do just, you know, or even 4 notes. I cannot retrograde. We only improvise 4 notes and you record, you know. Or you do like, okay, you notice you play a fifth, a half step and a fifth, and you want to work on these intervals. I mean, you can do a certain number of things, but I think when you go slowly and you write it down, you can go much deeper.
Yeah.
And sometimes I just... When I have to write something, I just put my hand on the piano and say, okay, which chord? Okay, I write it down. Mm. And I begin my song like that.
I think it works the same the other way, right? Like, you wouldn't be able to compose stuff that you improvise. Would you agree with that? Or
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because also when you improvise totally, you do stuff, you have no idea what you're doing. Sometimes stuff, you have a little idea and sometimes your hand goes by yourself. You don't control, or you have emotion, or you do, also the hazard, the accident is very important. You know, when I pick, I do often I begin, I just put my hands wherever, or I just pick up a note, and that makes a beginning. Or if I play with someone, I hear the intervals, and I say, okay, I will work on these intervals, and after I just go with the flow. I mean, but I like to do both.
Do you think that they somehow like stimulate different parts of you, or you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, but I don't believe that a good composer is a good improviser, and a good improviser is a good composer.
Okay.
I don't think it's all related, because I know some great improvisers, so whenever they write music, it's weird. And I think it's another task. It's another part of the brain.
Mm.
It's like two different languages.
And I've been actually wondering about that. It's some simplification, but it seems that within the improvised music, like there is this line between people who somehow connect improvisation with the spiritual,
mm-hmm.
and people who are like treating it more, you know, like as just as a thing they do, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Do you place yourself in one of these, or?
I think maybe I don't really want to go there. I think there is, but I don't really want to admit that.
Okay.
Because I'm a pretty atheist, and you know, my mother was a little bit too much in the church,
yeah,
to my taste, and I have a really bit rebellious thing, and I don't. Some spirit is different, but yeah, I play with some musicians who are really spiritual, and I totally respect it. And I think you touch something else, but I think you touch more the unconscious or something you're more mastered. Some people call it spirituality. Some people call it, I don't know how to call it.
Mm.
I don't like to put words. Just let it, yeah, you can call it spirit, or you can call it unconsciousness, or, but you touch a part of yourself, you don't know what it is.
Yeah.
And I love when I improvise, when after a good gig where I feel, when I don't remember what I did at all. I have a good feeling, I like that usually.
Thank you.
So this is it. Thank you so much for tuning in. This means a lot for all of us. I hope you're going to subscribe to the podcast, you know, to get the notifications about the coming episodes. I hope you're going to listen to more episodes because it's really, really good. If you wish to get in touch with me, you can write me at tomojakobson@gmail.com. If you wish to get in touch with Jan and John, just try on Facebook. And I want to extend my gratitude to Jon Lipscomb, my buddy who mixed the recordings you've heard from Sylvie playing piano. So that's it. Once more, thank you. Have a great life.